technical difficulties. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, there we go. We're going to see Herod's aqueduct and explore Caesarea Maritima, then drive through Tel Aviv down to Jaffa, which is the ancient city of Joppa. And then later on, at the end of the day, we are going to arrive finally for the first time in Jerusalem. Here is a top and bottom portion of a current map of Israel. The light area, light greenish, is Israeli owned. The multicolored areas are the Arab or Palestinian owned areas of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. This map is also after Israel annexed territory during the many Arab initiated wars. And as you can see, Israel still only owns about half of the best arable or agricultural land. The light blue lines on this map, I couldn't find a map from 1948 that I could copy and paste, so I had to kind of create my own here. Excuse me. The light blue lines on this map indicate the approximate lines given to the Palestinian Mandate in 1948. So all the light blue is Palestinian territory that the UN gave to the Palestinians and Arabs. It was so nice of the UN and Britain to divide the land so fairly and to give so much good usable land to Israel. You see, most of their land was the desert below Beersheba. God's promise to Israel is still in effect. He that curseth thee shall be cursed. And if you want to look at the map, a map of Britain in 1917, their empire stretched all the way around the globe in 1917. And that's when they became the owners of Israel. They took control from the Turks of Palestine. And they mistreated Israel the entire time they were in charge. They gave the Arabs the right to own weapons. And it was a jail offense for an Israeli to own a weapon, a Jew to own a weapon. And so they cursed Israel. They also didn't divide the land fairly. And what happened to Britain today? Their empire is back to their islands, back to the British islands. And so God's curse came upon Britain. It's amazing to look at that. But back to our trip. We drove west from Galilee, cutting through some of the Samaritan mountains, until we passed the West Bank's western border, so we didn't go through Palestinian territory. Then we turned south toward Tel Aviv. Caesarea Maritima, if you see the blue arrow I drew there, and there's a couple of blue dots on that map. Blue arrow, blue dots right there. Caesarea Maritima is on the coast right between Haifa and Netanya, which is on the map there, the two black cities on the coast on the north. This was our first destination, Caesarea Maritima area. Tel Dor is where we were going, which is the northern dot. Dor was one of many Phoenician cities that were famous for the purple cloth that they produced. The purple dye was so famous that the entire landmass divinely given to Israel was named after it. Canaan means purple. The northern harbor of ancient Dor here. So this, and by the way, there's the map of Dor. So this was a coastal city, a long, skinnier city on the coast. And there's the northern harbor. And as the site map indicated, the city was built primarily along the coast, like I just said. A longer, skinnier city. This is looking north from the center of Tel Dor toward the Samaritan Mountains. So this would be looking back toward Mount Carmel and also back toward Haifa. We were in the northern section of what is known as the Plain of Sharon. Here is one of the three flowers that is a possibility for being the biblical rose of Sharon. We don't know which flower the Bible is referring to for sure. Anyway, here's the central harbor that was in the middle of the industrial section of the city. The dye-making area is on the right arm of the harbor. And over here on the left is just around the hilltop sat what used to be the ancient shipyard of Dor. That channel between the island and mainland was man-made, and might have been used as their wet dock, where they would tie a ship while it sat there in the harbor and then repair it in a wet dock area. Here's another view of that shipyard in the Central Harbor. Toward one end of that man-made channel lie three rectangular chambers. Here's a decent picture of it. That lie sloping up the hillside. They are believed to be the dry docks. The metal ship sits in the middle of one of the rectangles, facing down its slope to the water. So that's the direction these channels are lying. So you can see there's about three long skinny humps there. You can see the next chamber in the right foreground. So let me point out to you there's this long hump, and then another long hump, and then another long hump right there. What used to be probably the dry docks. South of the shipyard was their temple area. There was two temples being constructed here. Excuse me. It is possible that one of them was meant to be for Dagon, the half-man, half-fish idol of the Phoenicians and Philistines, but we're not sure. Here is an artist's rendition of what they would have looked like finished, but they were never completed, and apparently never dedicated to their false god, so that's nice. Here's a side view of that temple area. And one more angle of it. And south of the temple, just north of the last southern harbor, was the fort or palace area. We're not sure if it was a fort or a palace. Could have been used as both. Here are the following three pictures. Are looking back at the northern temple area and panning south to the fort and palace area. Southern temple ruins. And the fort and palace area with the final southern harbor beyond it. This is standing at the entrance to the fort area and looking inland, back across the tell with a southern harbor on the right. And turning toward the harbor. The southern harbor now with a visual aid they put there for us. Here's an artist's drawing of the fort area's shoreline. So that's where I was standing on that hillside, and that's what they think it probably looked like, or something like that. And what that shoreline looks like seen from above it today. So right down below is what all that stuff was, where they think what they think was down there. Not much has been reconstructed of the fort area. Excuse me. These two pillars are what is left of the walls at the beginning of that peninsula. So there's not a whole lot left. And then they're at the end of the fort peninsula. It's a neat coral area. But not much that you can tell, you can see what it really was. Again, here's the southern harbor seen from the fort. And here is our whole group there in that fort area, courtesy of the brother that brought the drone. Our next stop was the die-making museum. They had several interesting articles outside, such as these ancient anchor stones. So back before they had enough iron to use for anchors, they would use these stones. And here's a Roman milestone found on the seabed near Haifa. Roman milestones were placed at intervals on every Roman road in the whole empire every 1,480 meters, or 1,000 Roman soldier double steps. Each milestone was inscribed with words of praise for the emperor or Roman procurator. So there was a lot of these put in the Roman Empire. Here's a very large anchor stone, suitable only for a very large ship. That young lady back there is a shorter lady. She's 5 foot something, so she's about 5 foot even. So she's it's not that huge of an anchor stone, but it's a pretty big one. Whoops. What happened to my words? Sorry about that. Here is some shipwrecked cargo from about AD 1404. There was copper and bronze coins with dates found. That's why they know it's 1404. There's an intact glazed bowl on the right, a bowl fragment in the center, and an oil lamp there. On the left is a piece of the ship's lead hull sheeting that was fastened with copper nails. It crumpled like an accordion when the ship struck an underwater rock. Pretty interesting piece of lead there. And then they had a selection of pottery and stoneware. The amphora on the left, which is on the right in the pictures, closer up, is a very big amphora. An amphora, I have mentioned later on, but an amphora is a pointed bottom jug. It was used to transport oils and liquids. But that amphora is very big. It's about 5 feet tall. Here's an ancient steel yard balance and an ancient wall mosaic. Imagine the time it takes to put one mosaic together. Incredible. Also found all around Israel are these ancient catapult stones and balliste stones from the Roman era, and also the Crusader era. Here's some luxury items of the Roman period. Note the elaborate double oil lamp with its really fancy feather-like handle. Luxury items. Here's a collection of ancient weaponry. There are arrowheads, spear points, sling stones, and catapult stones. The stones on the right would be sling stones. So they would use pretty large stones to sling. That's one reason why Goliath came crashing down. Along with the ancient items were more recent artifacts from the Napoleonic invasion. Cannons and iron cannonballs and swords and muskets and pistols. But the purple dye, that's why we were here. The purple dye was discovered in several common varieties of the Murex sea snail. On the left are discarded shells that were drilled already for harvesting the dye. And then on the right are ones that have not been harvested. at least not necessarily. Excuse me, I'm going to get a drink here. The museum showed us a video presentation of the dyeing process that was very interesting. Sadly, I cannot show that to you. But anyway, the purple dye was very expensive, costing its weight in gold. Mostly because one Murex snail produced one small drop of the dye, and hundreds or even thousands of snails could be required to dye enough wool enough times, depending on the size of the cloth desired, to stain the yarn or wool from light blue to deep purple. This is why only the very wealthiest class of people could afford to wear large pieces of purple clothing, or even small pieces of purple clothing. Excuse me. There was also different hues of the purple from different snails. The blue used by the Old Testament Jews for their fringes may have been made from these snails as well. You can see some blue on the left there. Our next stop was Herod's Aqueduct, which fed water into Caesarea Maritima. That's the end of it, what's left of the end of it. If my memory serves, Herod employed the Roman 10th Legion to build much of this aqueduct and Caesarea itself. I'm not sure. Something about the 10th Legion stuck in my mind, but I couldn't find out online. Nobody mentioned which one it was. But anyway, it doesn't matter too much. This part of the aqueduct is right on the Mediterranean beach. It ran north and south from the Shumai Spring, which was 10 kilometers away in the foothills of Mount Carmel. Over 2,000 years later, it is not in bad condition, as you can see. They built things to last. What have you built or even seen lately that will be around 2,000 years from now? Nothing but someone. We need to invest in people's lives. And where is Herod today? He's in a devil's hell, isn't he? For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? The Lord said. Here's a drone picture of that same area. 10 kilometers long. originally. And one more drone picture. We continued on then from there to Caesarea Maritima itself, which is the prime location in Israel to see Roman architecture. We started at the southern end of the city. It's on the seashore, by the way, where the theater was constructed. Here's a couple pictures of going into the theater. Very well preserved. Here again, the stones are original, dating to the time of Christ. This building is in amazing condition. This is the prime condition building there, the theater. It is highly probable that at least one apostle or even Philip the Evangelist preached in this very location. This became the hometown of Philip, at whose home Paul visited. And the prophet Agabus prophesied in Philip's home of Paul's arrest in Caesarea Maritima. So Philip could very well have preached here at some point. Acts 8:40, but Philip was found at Azotus, and passing through he preached in all the cities till he came to Caesarea. The center location in this picture is Herod's box seats. So he made himself the prime location for viewing, of course. Acts 21:8, and the next day we that were of Paul's company departed and came unto Caesarea. And we entered into the house of Philip the Evangelist, which was one of the seven, and abode with him. Excuse me, this is bad cough. Moving northward from the theater, but looking back at the corner, that the tallest point there is the corner of the theater. And then turning slightly the front right corner of the theater area. And this would be the rear stage behind the actual, what they called the stage, which was the soundboard, the tall soundboard that was built. The rear stage area of the theater where a lot of the actors would be getting changed and dressed. Turning from there to see the outer rim of Caesarea's fortress or palace wall. And right here I'll give you a map of Caesarea Maritima. So we start in the south. This yellow circle is the theater. And then we're right about where that red dot is, looking at the palace area. And then this long oval circle is the circus or hippodrome. This large yellow area would be the Crusader fortress, where we were going to go to. And the rest of it is just more different things of Roman things. This is the financial procurator's palace in this area, where this red dot is over here. Just to give you an idea of where we are and what we're going to go look at. Everywhere you looked was a Roman column or capital. Nearly every decorative stone that built Caesarea was imported. Israel has no marble or granite quarries. So if you see marble or granite, it was brought a long ways from Sinai or Cyprus or Greece or Turkey or Egypt. Passing beyond the wall, we're inside Herod's palace now. This is a drawing of what this area could have looked like. And Herod's palace area today. The sea is reclaiming this one-time palace. The pool area is still clearly visible, where the water sits in the middle there. It was an indoor pool surrounded on four sides by a pillared and roofed portico. The pool itself was open to the sky, but it was surrounded by a roof structure all the way around. So very elaborate, very decorative, wonderful place that Herod made for himself. This is looking back from the pool overlook, back into the rest of the palace area. This is the palace where Paul was imprisoned for 2 years, we believe. Right here in this palace area sits a replica of a stone found in secondary use in the theater area. The original stone is in a museum, and it bore the name of Pontius Pilate, the infamous executioner of Christ. Not to miss the irony, his name is marred on the stone. The four remnant lines read, Est Tiberium, Shus Pilatus, Ectus Judea. So it would have been something like Pontius Pilatus, Prefectus of Judea. So his name is not only marred spiritually, but it's marred on the stone. Very ironic. This is walking toward the eastern end of the palace area. This would have been a great courtyard portico with a garden area in the center open to the rain. This is another map of that palace with that big courtyard there on the kind of the central area of the picture. But to the north of the large courtyard, this courtyard here, was a large audience hall. This could very well be the judgment hall, where Paul was brought before Felix, Festus, and King Agrippa. So where that circular little grassy area is, that's the audience hall. That could be the location where Paul declared, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. I appeal unto Caesar. Right there, possibly. Acts 26, 27 through 28, same judgment hall. King Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? I know that thou believest. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. All these famous things happened probably right there. Just outside the palace perimeter was the southern entrance to the hippodrome or circus, as you saw from the map. This is Caesarea's hippodrome. This may be one of many places where many believers were brutally martyred once the persecution started. Here's a video of the circus area. It's a little blurry, so I'm going to let you look at that picture for a second. And then I move a little too fast. Sorry about that. Anyway, that's a good panoramic view. The hippodrome, as you see, was built right along the beach. Beautiful location for a city. Completely planned out by Herod and built by Herod. Here's a good panorama of the hippodrome. One of the brothers sent me. At the northern end of the hippodrome, we finally arrived at the rest of the old city. But the rest of the old city was also built upon by the Crusaders, so it's a mixture here. But even in the city, for the Romans to enjoy, Herod had spared no expense. So mosaics, detailed mosaics that Herod probably built. Beautiful, beautiful city that he produced here. It is always much harder to figure out what you are looking at in these dense areas, of course. But this would be, you know, shops and official offices, different things here. Probably not very many houses. These were palace vaults, these big holes were palace vaults sitting under what used to be the Roman financial procurator's office. So this would not have been the state procurator, but this is the financial procurator's office. Once Herod the Great died, Rome confiscated his palace, and his palace became the Judea procurator's palace. Just to the northwest corner of that palace, as we turn, is what was probably a fountain area. Again, made beautifully. This is a reconstructed 3D map of Caesarea. We're standing inland, looking toward the ocean. North is on the right, south is on the left. So we started again down in the south by the theater, and we've walked up along the beach past the circus, and we are by the financial procurator's office. Actually, this map is actually way over here, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Just to keep in mind of what this city looked like and where we've been. Here's the same map, but from the other viewpoint, from the ocean side. This harbor that Herod built was one of the marvels of ancient engineering. The harbor is fully man-made. All the pilings in the water were built primarily of the Romans' newly invented hydraulic cement. So they figured out how to get cement to harden underwater. New invention. To complicate matters as far as looking at what you're seeing and wondering what it is, shoreside of the harbor was built a crusader fortress during their crusader kingdom of Jerusalem. This was about AD 1000. Pretty neat fortress, but anyway, it's not Bible times. This is inside the fortress walls. We found more Roman architecture preserved there. This is the remains, looking south now, of Herod Caesarea, back toward the Hippodrome with the Cardo Maximus, the main north-south boulevard, plainly visible. The financial procurator's palace is on the right foreground corner. Which one was Philip's house? Probably none. He probably lived much farther away from this city center. Probably too dangerous for a Christian to live this close to all the soldiers and such. This is as close as we came to what is left of the harbor. Time was our enemy, but this was that man-made harbor that Herod made. Here's one more picture of Caesarea, what was to the north of the platform and stairs that we were standing from when we looked at the harbor. That's what's left to the north. We exited through the east gate of the Crusader Fortress. This is inside the gate. Very neat fortress. Here's the exterior of the gate and the fortifications north of the gate. If you turned around from the gate, that's what you were seeing. Excuse me. And here's what the fort entrance used to look like on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side is what it used to look like and what it does look like today. So the gate is in the corner. That pathway leads to the gate, but the gate is facing the other direction, to the north. And the defenses, that's part of the defenses, that's much the same as Solomon's design. At the gate, if that gate was attacked with a battering ram, they would roll that battering ram up to the gate, and then they'd have to turn it 90 degrees to batter at the gate. So the attackers would have to swivel their battering ram 90 degrees under extreme fire in order to attack the gate. So it's one of Solomon's designs. Turn the gate 90 degrees to the pathway. Maybe Solomon was pretty smart. We then drove through Tel Aviv, and I didn't get basically any pictures in Tel Aviv because it was just like being in a downtown city. You couldn't get much of a picture. So if you've been to a big city with skyscrapers, you know what it's like. You're in the middle of a cement cave. Not a lot of picturesque places when you're in the middle of the city. But that's a picture of Tel Aviv from south of it down in Jaffa, which is ancient Joppa. Jonah attained his ship to Tarshish at Joppa, and Joppa is where Peter raised Dorcas from the dead. If you find this particular nook in Jaffa, you can look down a private street and see the dark wooden door right there. Dark wooden door with a lighter colored plaque on it. That's the entryway of what they believe is Simon the Tanner's house. And, of course, that's a legend. Who knows if it really is Simon the Tanner's house. But I took a picture of it anyway. Also at Jaffa, you can see the building and corner room where Napoleon Bonaparte slept when his army passed through here. So this circular corner, the rounded corner, that's the room where Napoleon Bonaparte slept in. So exciting. Here's one more picture of downtown Jaffa. So that's a picture of a city for you. And then one more picture of Tel Aviv from Jaffa, looking more inland. Then onward, toward the Golden Arches of Jerusalem. There's a McDonald's sitting right there, the Golden Arches. And we're arriving, we're getting close. You notice it's pretty rocky, interesting terrain. Arriving, I just added these pictures in because people wanted to know what cities looked like. And so this is the outskirts of Jerusalem, the outer rim. We even got to drive by the personal residence of the current Prime Minister of Israel. This is Benjamin Netanyahu's house, his personal residence. And you see the guards there at the door. Have to have guards posted 24 hours a day, or else the Palestinians will come and blow it up. In Jerusalem, you'll see a lot of stone, well, everywhere in Israel, not just Jerusalem, but everywhere in Israel, you'll see a lot of stone and brick buildings. In Jerusalem, however, a law was passed that every building must be painted a natural white color to maintain the beauty of Jerusalem. So you won't see any blue buildings or yellow buildings or white or anything but whitish, natural white. Then we drove by the... drove by the national residence of the Prime Minister of Israel. This is the national residence now, so this is where the voted Prime Minister gets to go live, just like the White House. Sorry we didn't get a very good picture of it, but at least that's the entrance to it. And finally, we got our first good look at ancient Jerusalem. So that's, if you see that gold dome right there, that's the Dome of the Rock. And all this solid white stone is the Temple Mount. This dense area is the old city. That's how big the old city was. This is the the Hinnom Valley, I believe. Right here. This is Mount of Olives. And this is the other valley. What was the other valley called? Somebody help me out. Hinnom Valley runs into the Kidron Valley. Kidron Valley. And of course, the city of Jerusalem is a whole lot bigger than the city of David. So this is a picture to the toward the left of the Dome of the Rock. There's the Dome of the Rock. That's just a portion of Jerusalem. In this picture, it's to the right of the Dome of the Rock, Mount of Olives, central. There's the Dome of the Rock where my pointer is. So again, this is the old city, and Jerusalem is much, much bigger than it used to be. If I recall, the city of David makes up either 1 or 5% of Jerusalem today. I forget which number it is, but I think it's 5% of Jerusalem. Here's a map from Lean Ritmeyer, which I purchased, so I have the right to use it. This is, again, a drawing of the ancient city of Jerusalem with the Hinnom Valley on the top left and the Kidron Valley. And this is looking from the other picture is looking directly from the south. And so, again, the Kidron Valley, the Hinnom Valley. And the Dome of the Rock is right there. Finally got to see Jerusalem. All right. That's the end of the slideshow for today. Are there any questions? It's a slope. It's just a slope. It's not a cliff, but it's a grassy slope that's dry. And so...